Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And today we're joined by Adam. Adam Wormleyton, how are you doing?
I'm okay, thanks very much for having me here. Amazing to be in LRM Towers.
Well, on the fabled salmon sofa.
The hallowed salmon sofa.
Now, I really wanted to get you in because it will completely indulge my need to nerd out about L322 Range Rovers, because you've turned up in your extremely lovely example today. And yeah, we've been all over, haven't we? And
absolutely gorgeous. I sat in it.
You did look good in it.
Yeah, I tell you what. Oh,
it's not for sale, but you did look good in it.
Everything's for sale, isn't it?
at a price.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing.
If you don't follow Adam on Instagram already, you should, because he does some great content, and a lot of it is, well, I get the impression it will be increasingly Range Rover focused, given
hopefully
your recent purchase. Tell us a little bit about the beautiful black L322 you turned up in earlier on.
Yeah, so it's a 2010 3.6 TDV8 autobiography. So it's at the point where they change into the final facelift of the L322. That went on till about a 62 plate here in the UK, which is about 2012. And I don't know whether it falls right at the end of the 3.6s before they went to the 4.4. But yeah, it's a lovely thing to drive. I could talk for hours about it. Hopefully that's why we're
Let's
here.
Let's do that.
about all the nuances of why I like it. But yeah, it's just a lovely car to drive. I've had quite a few in the past. And I just got that itch that you spoke about recently. About,
not the jagged.
No, the one you're getting the cream for. But there's a different itch.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I need to have another one of those in my life at some point. And it just so happened it is now. So, yeah, I'm very, very, very chuffed with it.
Yeah, so you should be. I mean, you're not helping either mine nor Steve's.
Even L322s have come onto my radar. And I'm going to... We used to joke that you kept bringing them up in conversation.
Yes.
But they are excellent value for money. They really are.
Yours, like you said, it will be one of the last 3.6s before they went over to the 4.4. But that final facelift is just, it is just beautiful.
And I know everyone bangs on about the Clarkson era, because he's got the one before the final facelift with the standard dials.
Yep.
And the final facelift they brought in the TFT dash and a few other sort of changes like that. And I do think that it is just a wonderful example of the Range Rover. It's just, for me, the L322 epitomises what a Range Rover should have been. You know, it's that majesty. It's an occasion to go out in it. I've had the later ones. I've had L405s, and they never felt as special. And I can tell you, and this is not going to help you, Steve, if you're secretly thinking that you might want one.
Well, but, yeah, I mean, I know my wife, if she was in there, she'd be like, yes, why can't we get one of these?
But I was genuinely more excited about getting that vehicle than if someone had said, here's the keys to a brand new Range Rover.
That says something, doesn't it?
To me, it was the last Range Rover with proper Range Rover character as far as looks go. I think the L405 and the L460, the interior and the comfort and the refinement is class-leading. But to me, the quintessential look and the styling of the L322, especially in that last phase that you've got, is very hard to beat.
Yeah, and I don't know whether the listeners will know as much of the nerdy detail as me, and I'm not an expert by any stretch. I am like a rank amateur. I'm just, you know, very nerdy about them. But when they were developing the L322, obviously they had to work in conjunction with the BMW engineers, and Land Rover had to write a Bible. They called it the Bible. So that the BMW engineers could understand what is the ethos of what a Range Rover should be and what a Land Rover should do, because they just didn't get it.
Yeah,
they were thinking that their X5 that was going to come out was going to be, you know, the thing that would be, you know, everything to all men. But they were saying, no, you know, we've got to do this a different way. And when they eventually got their heads around the fact that it had to be different to the way BMW would have done things, they then looked at previous Range Rovers for inspiration. But interestingly, they didn't look at the P38. They went to the classic. And that's why I think when you look at the L322, you can see the classic in it a lot more than you saw that in the P38.
Well, when I just sat in yours just now, I noticed it felt very much like a classic in terms of like the amount of glass and how square it felt inside.
It has low door lines,
tall
windows,
really
and
lovely,
the floating roof, which I know the P38 had with the blacked out D pillars and stuff like that, but They're just, yeah, proper, pure. Let's talk about the book. Can we talk about the book that you brought with us?
Oh, yes, yes. I should have brought it in here to show you, Steve. I'll show you afterwards. So I have, and I'll try and describe it for the listeners, because obviously this is very much an audio thing. I have a main dealer autobiography brochure. So this is A3 in size, landscape printed, okay, hardback, ring bound. And it's got about, I don't know, 40 pages in it. And it would sit in a Land Rover dealer. So someone would walk in and they would be interested in a Range Rover or a Range Rover Sport. But if they were interested in the autobiography, there was this brochure to look through. And it's these beautiful, big, glossy pictures of, you know, fancy shots in fancy places, all the colorways, all the interiors, the different types of wood and the leather you could get. And then some full double page interior shots of the different color leather. Now, you'll know from seeing mine.
Yours is very unique. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Well, I've never seen one in the flesh, but obviously I had seen it in the book, and I'm really chuffed that now I've got the book that goes with the car as well. So mine, for everyone's benefit, is a full tan leather interior with the sort of cream, I think it's called the Alston stitched leather headlining. So everything below the door lines is tan. Obviously, dash top is black, and then the roof is kind of a light color. And then it's, you know, in this book that shows it with various different options. There's the Pimento and Ebony, which is the red and black combo. And I was showing Martin, there's one double page, you have to see it. It's really hideous. And I don't think anyone ever bought it. It was called Kingfisher. And it's like a tealy blue, the whole car inside.
Really?
Yeah, really horrible. But I've never seen one. To the one person that's probably listening that's got it, I'm really sorry I just said that.
Yeah, but now I need to see a picture. So
well, I'll show you.
Yeah. We'll do a bit of we'll take a few pictures and we'll do a quick flick through the book for the social post. But yeah, Kingfisher.
Yeah, the dealer that I used to take my Range Rovers to, obviously, by the time the L322 had gone out of service, you know, they weren't selling them, they kept this back and they gave it to me as like a bit of a present.
That's really nice of them.
Yeah, that was proper. Yeah.
Well, I did spend a lot of time with their service team.
Yeah.
So they probably felt sorry for me.
But no, this autobiography book is they would have wheeled that out for the high rollers, the new car buyers who wanted to spend top dollar on a really, really bespoke, the cream of the Range Rover buyer. And yeah, you were seriously lucky to have hold of that. It's a really nice thing.
I can't get my head around. We've just been out for lunch, haven't we? And no alcohol past our lips, which is
very well behaved.
Which is amazing. But we were talking about, like, people have probably watched the Clarkson stroke Harry Metcalf YouTube video where what is peak car? And that's probably peak Range Rover, in your opinion, then?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I had L405s after I'd had L322s, and I never felt... They felt just a bit bloaty, if that's the right way to describe it. They never felt as good as an L322. I think they got a little bit too big. And it's obviously personal choice. There are people out there that love them. But the L322, whether or not you go for the standard dial, which is up to about 2008, and then 2009 was when the TFT dash came in, either one of those, they're just fantastic cars. And you said that they are great value for money, and that is true. However, definitely do your homework if you're thinking of getting one. Not directing this particular view, Steve, for any particular reason.
I'm feeling pressure here.
But
peer pressure to buy a Range Rover.
I went to have a look at quite a few, because I was originally going to get a 4.4 TDV8, because it has the 8-speed gearbox, and everyone on YouTube, we were talking about YouTube at lunch, but everyone says that's the one to go for because it's the last engine they put in it. It's a better engine. Yeah, true. It's about 40 brake horsepower more. They say it's smoother. The 8-speed box is good. If you've driven a more modern Land Rover, you're going to have that box in it. I've got the same box in my Discovery 4. But every time I went to see one, I was deeply disappointed in that whole buying experience. I mentioned earlier that I wanted to walk away feeling happy about the vehicle that I was potentially going to purchase. And there were some grotty cars and some grotty car lots, you know, and looked great on the advert, and the pictures look really nice.
When it was fresh in and they'd cleaned it for the photos.
Well, I think some of them maybe doctor the photos a bit, because I was actually going to go for an ivory interior. I really want to. I'd never had an ivory interior. For some reason, all my previous cars have had the dark interior, the ebony. And they are really good because they don't show the wear and the dirt as much. But I thought, no, I'm at that age now. I've hit the big 5-0. So I could go for an ivory interior. And I started looking at some. and they were so disappointing. Literally, you open the driver's door and the seat looks like your grandma's face.
Right.
So many creases and it's like, just, it was so...
They don't age as well, do no. they? I noticed that in a few cars, actually. I would be... I mean, your interior colour is like a dark tan, isn't it?
It is. I mean,
it almost matches my shoes. That's a bit more...
It's a bit more...
Yours is a bit more orangey tan.
It is definitely orangey. I mean, my mum got in it for the first time. I went out for dinner with my mum last night and she opened the door and like there was a look of sudden shock as she got in because, you know, all that colour just hitting you in the face. It's quite unusual.
Yeah, it reminded me immediately of an Alfa 156.
That colour is very similar.
That colour is there because the Italians do that kind of that leather, don't they?
Reddish brown, a clay colour almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're being PC, you'd say it was a bold statement.
A bold statement. Yeah. I tell you what was a bold statement on the subject of bold colour choices. At the dealer I used to work at, we used to look after the Range Rovers belonging to... I never quite figured out who it was. I think it was something to do with an embassy, but the invoice always used to say Dubai office. They were always white. They had a classic P38, an L322, and I think they'd just got an L405 as I was leaving. And the L322 was white. They were all white with a blood, like an ox blood red interior. And it was something to behold.
Full red.
Yeah, red everything.
Everything.
Everything was red.
That's probably the Pimento.
Right.
And quite often the Pimento was mixed with black to tone it down. But I've seen those as well, where the doors, the dash, the seats, everything is full red.
Mm.
And yeah, I mean...
It's quite a thing.
That's another bold statement.
I'd love to see where it is now, whether they still own it or not. But like I say, they still had an LSE that we used to look after. It was, like a chestnut brown interior with white panels. Really lovely thing. Never did any mileage. Just came to us for servicing and then sat somewhere, presumably.
Since in terms of like, because I noticed yours has got the TFT dash.
Yeah.
Is that quite laggy in comparison to like modern stuff?
Well, no.
Because I know like Discovery 3s and Discovery 4 sat navs and infotainment can be a bit laggy and almost dated before it was new.
In actual fact, it's very quick. So I noticed that the centre screen, so I'll come back to the TFTs, the dash part, but the centre screen with all this, you know, the sat nav and everything, the touch precision, you know, you touch it, it beeps, and then, you know, the screen changes, is very quick. I think it's actually quicker than my Discovery 4, which will be six years newer.
Wow.
Than the Range Rover. So the Range Rover's 15 years old, you know, reminded of that.
It doesn't look it.
Unbelievable that it's
for 15. A 15-year-old car, it looks fantastic. But the TFT dash, in terms of what it does, it's fairly static. You know, you've got your two dials, and then if you bring up the menu, it comes into the centre panel where you can change things about the car. And then in the off-road mode, I think the dials change. I've not done that yet on this vehicle. But, you know, in terms of, say, like the rev counter and the speedos, it's all very instant, very quick.
Mm.
The only difference for me is getting used to, on the Discovery 4, you've got your two static dials, if you like, the analogue versions, and then like a tiny TFT screen, which is kind of basic. It was a bit like a Game Boy screen in the middle, quite sort of pixelated. And I'm used to having something in the middle, and now there's nothing in the middle of the Range Rover. It's just like this dark space. But it's nice and bright, and it's colourful. I love it.
Does yours have the dual view?
I don't think it does. I've not tried that. It definitely has TV. It doesn't have DVD.
Right.
But it has the 6-disc CD changer. It has normal radio, it has DAB.
Okay.
It has in the centre armrest between the two seats, it's a very shallow cubby box because it's got the four-zone climate underneath.
Right.
So you've not really got much of a cubby box there, but in what is there, there is a special sort of iPod plug. You know the old...
Yes,
the
yes.
wider iPod fitting, whatever they used to be called before the Lightning one.
I know what you mean.
We all know what we mean.
Chunky plug, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's got a coiled cable that goes into there that you would plug your old iPod into. But luckily, the previous owner left in this device on the end, which is a Bluetooth thing.
So I can
stream from my phone to it.
Ideal.
And it's also got a USB plug in there as well. So if you like load up a USB plug with music, you can stick it in there. So it's got enough.
It's almost like... it's the same age as my Jag XK, and that's got 6 CD. It's got the same USB thing in the cubby boxy bit in the middle. It's very similar.
Yeah, the tech.
But that's quite laggy. I would think the infotainment on that is quite laggy.
I remember when the
like a delay.
When the TFT screens first appeared in the L322, it was like mind-blowing. When you were so used to, like you say, your traditional dials, and yeah. The entire instrument cluster is a screen. It was, wow, this is so cool. And when it boots up, when you start the engine, and everything just like fades away and appears again.
Amazing. I like, one of the features of it I really like is when you go into the settings, there's this thing called torchlight for the dials. So in torchlight mode, it will only light up the dial where the needle is. So as you're revving the engine or the speed picks up, it will highlight that area brightly and the rest of it is slightly greyed out. So rather than have it all sort of really bright in your face, it's sort of a little bit more subtle.
That's lovely. I didn't know that existed.
Nice little feature.
Yeah, very cool. We're jumping ahead, though. The L322 is obviously your latest purchase, but your Land Rovers have always been a part of your life.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about where it started and tell us about the rest of your fleet, if you will.
Okay. So like most listeners... and people that read LRM and any other Land Rover magazine, started when I was a kid. I grew up with Land Rovers around me, and in particular Range Rover Classics, which I guess made me know about the brand. It wasn't like I was sort of hell-bent on getting one back then. But then when I got to the age of 16, 17, I was doing weekend jobs, saving up for my first car, and probably reading LRO, to be honest. David Bowyer, however you pronounce his name, he was doing features at the time of restoring and rebuilding a Series 3 in marine blue, and that sort of got me hooked. I thought, that's what I want for my first car. So that's what ended up happening. I bought a Series 3. It was a 1979 2.25 petrol marine blue, and all the knowledge I thought that I had, you know, built up by reading everything about it, my dad trusted me because he was paying for it. I went out there and I completely ignored all of that. And I saw one shiny panel, some graphics down the side, and I thought, that's the one for me. And we bought it. And my dad, I remember, he paid the cash and he said, right. And this, I think the car was in Nuneaton. I live sort of Loughborough area. And my dad said, right, I'll see you at home. And he just got in his Range Rover and just drove off.
See you later then.
Yeah. So I had to drive home in this car that I'd never driven one in my life.
With no mobile phone.
Oh, yeah. No.
That
didn't exist.
No. No communication whatsoever.
No breakdown cover, anything.
That's how it used to be done back in the day.
You didn't worry about it.
Pre-Martin's era, you know, this is what we did.
In at the deep end.
Yeah.
But I remember those first few miles in that Series 3 just thinking, this is a massive mistake. How am I going to tell my dad that I hate it? But of course, you just get used to them. And by the time I got home, I was sort of thinking, oh, it's not that bad after all. And I had that for about 5 years. And it had to be like a rolling restoration in so much as I couldn't let it, you know, fail. I had to keep driving because my only car, I had to keep it moving.
Yeah, that's a big...
And luckily, it was pretty good. Although, minor issue, it was condemned by the Department of Transport on its MOT. It was falling in half. But we fixed that. And I kept it for 5 years and traded that in for a Range Rover Classic, a 3.9 V8 auto. It was just a Vogue, and it was Trocadero red with Winchester grey interior.
So were you in your early 20s about that?
Yeah, I was about 20, 21.
Yeah.
That's a lot of car, isn't it, for a 20-year-old?
It was. It was thirsty as well, but I loved it.
So you're about 2 or 3 years older than I am, so we would have been sort of similar cars at similar stages, because I went from a Series 3 to a classic Range Rover back when I was 22.
Yeah.
And I had a choice at the time between going to the pub or putting petrol in to go to work.
Yeah.
It was, that's how thirsty they were in comparison to what you earn at that age.
Yeah. And that's, so, yeah, yeah, I mean, my love of Land Rovers just sort of snowballed from there, really. And apart from a few company cars along the way, I've basically not driven anything else but Land Rovers. And I've had, you know, I've been fortunate enough to try lots of different cars over the years. I had the new Defender when that first came out. I had the Range Rover Sport Supercharged, the first one.
Really?
When that first came out.
First edition?
Not the first edition. It was Zambezi Silver, but it wasn't a first edition.
Right, got you.
So it was on a 55 plate.
Yes.
But yeah, that was a very special vehicle. Lots of great noise. Wasn't actually that fast, really, but made a great noise.
Interesting fact for you, I'll just slot in. When they brought out the 5 litre Supercharged Sport, the 5 litre Sport could get to 100 and stop again in the same amount of time it could take the 4.2 just to get to 100.
I could believe that, because I had the 5 litre Supercharged in the L322 a number of years later, and I'd come out of the 3.6 TDV8 I had at the time into the 5 litre, and in like the first 10 miles of driving, I actually thought, this is mental. This is crazy fast.
Yeah.
And I was a bit scared of it, but obviously you sort of get used to it. It was very urgent.
Thank yes. God. I found that. I was going to say, you mentioned the comparison between the 3.6 and the 4.4. I often found the 4.4 was a little bit more responsive on the pedal, but you don't always want that. And that's something I found the petrol, especially the supercharged petrols, took to the extreme. It was quite difficult to drive them properly smoothly in certain areas, whereas 3.6 is quite forgiving. You can sort of...
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to waft, if you like.
Yeah, I always think a Range Rover should be a wafter, not a get down the road as fast as you can kind of thing.
No, I agree. I mean, even if you've got the 5 litre V8,
isn't it? You know.
You don't go out in a full-size Range Rover to tear ass around like a hooligan.
No, quite.
Well, you'd hope not. Yeah.
Well, most people...
No, you'd buy an SVR if you wanted to do that.
Exactly.
And have the exhaust.
The SVRs are a funny one, aren't they? Like, as Range Rovers go.
Yeah.
They're still holding their money, though.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they've probably had about 8 owners and...
Stolen twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen one, apart from the one we, Land Rover picked me up in once, which was quite nice, on one of their celebration things. But I've never seen one being driven sensibly. They've always been driven absolutely horrendously.
There used to be one that used to go up and down the A1. I used to see it quite a lot when I left work, that used to tow a massive cattle trailer, and it was always covered in muck. I thought, fair play.
Okay.
But yeah, the rest of the
farmers
time.
Farmers that have money, though.
They've always got the... they're always in sport mode, dynamic, with the exhaust valves open,
yeah,
popping
bit,
and banging through
obnoxious.
Town centres. But they're a bit... Yeah, they are a bit of an odd one, aren't they, the SVR?
They're a bit Marmite now, aren't they? Because, I mean, with all this thing about EV cars and everything being a lot quieter, you'd kind of feel a bit sort of obnoxious, yeah, like you yeah. say, driving around one of those with it sort of roaring away all the time.
It's antisocial.
Yeah. Especially in the blue. I can't remember the colour name, but like the bluey purple. It was like the signature SVR colour.
It was like the BMW Estoril blue, wasn't it?
Sort of.
A little bit darker.
Yeah. No, sort of. If you're going to compare it to a BMW colour, probably like velvet purple, purple velvet or whatever. It's like real, like, deep.
It's the only colour I really... What other colour do they do the SVR?
You could do
black,
it.
Silver,
it black,
silver,
black or grey.
Yeah. So you don't really notice them the same, do you? It's the blue. It's quite a vivid sort of in-your-face blue.
Well, you do if you know what to look for. Things like the alloys, you'd see the shape of the front seat through the front window. They're different.
Yeah, you see, you've got a resident, like, you know...
Range Rover connoisseur.
Yeah. See, Range Rovers have always just... I never grew up around Range Rovers, so I never had that kind of... I owned one once. That was just a knee-jerk reaction to... an ex-girlfriend dumping me. I was like, right, I'm going to come buy a V8. Sod you. You know?
And then, I bet that showed her.
Yeah. She's just like...
Some rotten old three-door on your driveway.
Yeah, it was. I should have been warned, really. I turned up and the tow rope was proudly around the bull bar at the front and had some remold off-road, like, mud tyres on it.
Sounds like a well-cared-for example.
Yeah.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Funny you should say, actually, I was probably about the same age, possibly slightly older, when I had my first Range Rover, which was also a classic. It would have been 21 or 22, because I had a Mini Cooper S, which I stupidly bought, and it sat on my parents' drive because I'd rather drive a Land Rover. And I bought this Range Rover Classic off a friend at work for £350, got it through an MOT, and the camshaft was so worn out that it was like driving a non-turbo diesel. It was so sluggish.
Really? Have you ever told all of Martin's stories about when he bought a car, it was really cheap?
Yeah.
I can't afford expensive things.
But you've got some nice things, eh? Series 3?
Yeah, no, don't get me... Yeah, but when... I think I just like to take opportunities when they come up. I don't really go looking for stuff, but if something comes up and I go, ooh, I could probably afford that.
I've noticed that about you. You very much, next thing, something else turns up. I think, what?
But we won't go into it because we're talking with Adam, but the Series 3 and the 110 are keepers now. I'm happy with them.
I'm
telling you now, right? 6 months from now, one of them will be gone.
Until my, yeah,
I reckon we'll have a shake on that because, yeah, you will. Because I always think that the perfect Land Rovers are the ones that find you. If you go looking for them, like you said about the Range Rover going around, you see them in car lots, don't you? And they're looking sorry for themselves.
Yeah.
They get pushed further towards the back. And they're the ones that you just need to leave sitting exactly where you saw them.
Because you can walk into a massive money pit if you don't buy wisely with.
Even if you do buy wisely. So you asked me earlier about my current fleet. So I'm lucky enough to have four at the moment. So I've got the Range Rover I just bought. I've got the Discovery 4, which is my daily driver.
We'll go into that in a minute.
Yeah, lots to talk about there. I've got a Series 3 short wheelbase, 1982, sits in the garage.
Oscar. Lovely vehicle.
And then I've got a 110 XMOD Wolf.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Which is nice and rugby.
With your Penman trailer?
Yes, I've got a Penman trailer, yeah. But it has not been converted for camping. I'm trying to keep it original. Military look.
It's a heavy old lump.
Yeah. But, I mean, when I bought my Discovery 4, the point that I was going to make there was that I had a spreadsheet and everything. All the vehicles that I went to look at and I rang up about, I had all the service intervals all documented to see which one had got the best service history and everything. And the one I bought, it was, you know, serviced on the button every time. The MOT was almost to the exact day every year. And it all checked out. And yet, it can still go wrong because it's made by Land Rover. Yeah. And I love Land Rovers probably more than anyone, but you've just got to have your eyes wide open. They are going to cost you money.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a cheap way in or way out, is there?
On the face of it, if you're not afflicted with the disease that spreads among people who love Land Rovers, we can't say no to them. They are the apples of our eyes. On the face of it, a lot of the time, they're actually not very good, are they?
I got in my 90 this morning, and I've never seen so much water in football before. In that Land Rover, I have seen more water than that. I thought, where on earth has that come in from? Park in the same spot every time.
Even more troubling if it didn't even rain last night.
Well, I haven't driven it for 2 or 3 days, so it's within the last 2 or 3 days, but there was a lot of water in the football. I'm like, oh, for goodness sakes.
And it, give us a break.
I just went round the roundabout and it came out the crack in the door. That was it. It's gone now. But yeah, they're not very good cars, but that's why I think we love them.
Yeah.
A bit like you'd rather have, you're more excited for the L322 than you are the L405 because it's more challenging, would you say? Or potentially more challenging? Is that what
I don't think to... No, not because it's more challenging. I just think it just epitomizes Range Rover more for me.
Right, okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Did you buy it from a, you say you had a lot of bad experiences of going to car lots and finding them at the back. Did you end up getting it from a specialist?
I did, yeah. So I found a garage down in Warwickshire, not far from Gaydon actually, where the museum is, and they specialise in Range Rovers and prestige vehicles. I went down to see this vehicle and they got a number of them there, some sort of awaiting prep that weren't being advertised yet. They got some L405s, got an L460s there, but they've also got things like, you know, very fancy Mercedes. They had a Rolls Royce there as well. And the guys at XJLR that run this garage, and they were just really nice. And they're very focused on the customer service and me feeling good as a customer.
Mm.
And they've been really good, you know, because when I viewed the car, I pointed out a couple of things that needed doing, you know, and they're sorting those out. Like, it's got these surround cameras, another thing that it's got that I've never had. They're a bit of a gimmick on that model because you can't, by the time you fiddled with the screen, the point of why you needed it is probably gone. Like, I'm at a junction, I'll just press the screen 10 seconds later. Some of them didn't work. And it's not like something I'm ever going to use, but I just thought if I'm buying it and it's advertised and having it,
absolutely,
they should work.
You may as well.
So they're replacing the cameras for me and it's all on their cost, not mine. But they've just been a really nice place to deal with. And I went down, they were fixing the near side front brake disc shield. They corrode around the mounting bolts. There's three fixtures and they corrode and then they rattle about like a
horrible sound.
Like
you're dragging the tin.
Yes, it sounds like it's falling apart, but it's just this little metal thing at the back of the disc. And so I took it back and they were fixing that. They also sorted out the rear washer that had stopped working. And, you know, I sat down in their office, had some coffee, chatted with them. They showed me other cars they got. And we just talked about cars and Range Rovers. And I thought, this is how it should be. not going away for some grotty car lot thinking, oh, feel a bit dirty now.
Yeah.
Need to go home and have a wash.
I've looked at, I remember going hunting for a Freelander 2, and I ended up going to some car lots around Peterborough area, in fact. It was the, I just came away just really despondent. That,
yeah.
My friend bought an X3 from a car lot in Peterborough. I can't remember what the car lot's called, but he got it home and he ran it around for a bit, and it was all right, actually. It was top spec 3-litre SD, so the fast one, twin turbo. And he said, oh, can you come over and we need to do discs and pads on it. I said, yeah, no problem. He ordered the bits, got it jacked up, took the wheels off, did one side, went the other side, went to fit the disc, and the caliper wouldn't go over the disc. We were looking at it going, something's wrong here. We compared the disc side to side. The pads were the same. Turns out it had been crashed, not categorised, and they'd put a strut off a 2-litre, which has smaller brakes and a smaller spring and a smaller damper, on the corner of this top-spec SD.
Wow.
And just sold it.
Horrendous. Yeah.
It's yeah, cowboys out pretty there. Eye-opening. Mm. But
yeah, yeah. You've just got to be really mindful.
What's the name of this company? Sorry, if yeah, because this sounds really. Oh, God, well, I don't want to go and visit.
You know, you're going to go on their website.
Yeah,
about 10 minutes, don't you?
They're called PH Automotive.
PH Automotive, cool.
In Warwickshire. Yeah. So yeah, many thanks to those guys, and they're going to take it away to fix the cameras, because the cameras have all been replaced. It's got brand new cameras, but they've found out that apparently the car, there's a software update needed, because they put the new cameras in, they all came up on the screen, and then the car shut them down immediately. And there's a software update it needs. Okay. So they've said, look, we'll come and collect it. We'll give you, they've got a Range Rover Sport V8, and they said you can have that for the day, and we'll take it to the local Land Rover dealer who are going to do the software update for us. I don't know whether that's hooky. I don't care. Yeah, probably is. I'm sure it isn't, sorry.
I'm sure there's an arrangement.
Yeah. I'm sure they're going to pay for that. And they'll do the software update and then bring my car
just come
back.
Around at lunch. a minute before.
Don't pap your horn on the way in. Just drive around the back.
Just neat round the back. And,
no, but just the fact that they know, because they're ex-JLR people, they know the network. They know
they've
the foibles of cars.
Of course, yeah.
And they know that things are going to probably go wrong, and therefore they're willing to fix it. It's not like a lot of places where they'll just say, right, you bought it, you're off, bye.
Yeah.
So what makes you say you use a Discovery Forcer daily, why would you not just use a Range Rover daily? Is that a treats car?
No, I mean now the
it's
Range
daily at the moment.
The Range Rover is my daily.
The fact that Discovery 4 may or may not have broken down recently, but
yes, so The Discovery 4 is brilliant, but currently is not operational. It's having a rest.
Okay.
So the Range Rover is now my daily, and all I can think is, thank heavens I did buy the Range Rover, otherwise I would have to come here in the Wolf today. And although I love
it's
the
Wolf, harsh, isn't it? I mean,
no, but it's not as much fun to drive as the Range Rover. I see it as being almost like splitting up the daily use, half and half.
Okay, yeah.
The Discovery, as anyone who's had one will know, I mean, the whole reason I was going to use it for my little holiday up in Scotland was I use it for shooting, and I use it for doing things like going logging, and I use it for holidays, and it's my daily driver, because they're so capable. You can put so much stuff in it, and I've always had
work, family.
Yeah, it's brilliant. But I mean, that's what it was always designed to do, isn't it? I always put dog guards in my cars because I used to have a dog, but then also, if you want to load up the boot, it's not all going to fly forward and, hit the kids on the back of the head type of thing. And you can just load them up. And it was all ready for the holiday. But, fate conspired against me, just slightly.
It's so annoying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I nearly, I was telling this story at lunchtime, but I nearly decided to go home. It was a long journey back home, about 180 miles. I thought, shall I just go home and grab the Range Rover? And we just do the holiday in the Range Rover, which, first world problem, clearly.
Yes.
But
oh no,
it was an unknown entity, because I've not had it very long, not done any big journeys. I thought, well, what if I get halfway there and then that breaks down?
That would have made a fantastic YouTube thumbnail. Two breakdowns in one day.
I could have one of those shocked faces where I'm screaming in despair.
Something on fire in the background. Yeah.
Well, that might actually be true. An actual picture of my car on fire on the M6.
The Discovery as yet diagnosed, we should say. A restricted performance and not very happy.
Yeah, so it's had a restricted performance problem, which they're very confident is the secondary turbo shutoff valve. So they did some road tests with it, because you could accelerate, and obviously with sequential turbos, your first turbo is the first bit. Obviously the second turbo gets called on for extra punch, and it was letting off the power that should then shut off, and the valve was sticking. Now it sends a message saying the airflow or whatever all this stuff happens and it's a restricted performance. And they reckon that that's it, that shut-off valve. And we've been waiting for about a month to get the part because of the cyber attack with JLR. They couldn't get one. So they've now got the part, and it was due to go in before I went to Scotland. This is the irony. So it was due to go in, and then they rang me and said, we're not quite sure we can fit it in before you go away. It's like 2 days to go. And I said, well, don't worry, because I know how to coax it around. You know, as long as I don't do hard acceleration, I can just coast around. That's what I've been doing. But then something else must have happened, because I was cruising up the M6. It had been doing, you know, motorway speeds for about 3 hours. I'm on cruise control for probably one of the first times ever on the M6. It was going really well. And then all of a sudden, it just said restricted performance.
Awful, yeah.
You know, I was only doing 1,500 revs. And I just thought, well, that's not what normally happens. And then I coaxed it off the motorway, almost got to my waypoint destination. And then it said DPF full, visit dealer. And I thought, well, it probably isn't full because I've just done 3 hours of motorway driving. It should have done the passive regens anyway. But something's obviously gone wrong, maybe a sensor. And I'm waiting to hear how the patient is.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, nothing too serious. We did the CSOV valve, as they're known in the trade.
Yeah.
Quite a common thing. And also because they're vacuum and boost control, the little rubber pipes that go onto the actuator, they sometimes just fall off. So hopefully nothing too drastic.
Yeah, hopefully. But I think I might start up a Just Giving page.
Just in case.
Yeah. Just Giving for Adam's Land Rovers. Yeah.
I mean, he could end up having to come here in a Series 3. Could have been even more.
Yeah, it probably would have got here, though.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Simplicity.
Yeah. I mean, the most
actually very reliable.
More would be the Wolf, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
One you could probably depend on the most.
Yeah, I mean, that's a 300 TDI. I mean, they're fantastic. If you've never had one and you see one come up, it's definitely worth looking at. Yeah, for the purest defender experience. They're very rugged. They're not sort of more Spartan inside than a normal defender, really.
Mm.
You know, you've still got door cards, you've still got normal seats. And if you get the ones that had the Remus upgrade, they've got the full sort of very thick noise killer mat stuff in the front.
Yeah, they have beefed up. Yeah.
Mine was an FFR fitted for radio, so it had all the racks in the back. And in the inside of the GRP roof is what's called the RAD-HAS lining, which is to deflect radio signals, but also acts as like insulation. So it's actually quite a nice warm place in the winter. And it's a nice thing to drive. It's got power steering. You know, the 300 TDI is very reliable as an engine. I've just messed that up. but I've taken it on some really long journeys. I was at the Land Rovers of London thing that was down for the last Overland thing when Tim Slessor came into London.
Yeah.
It did that trip. First time I've ever driven the Land Rover into central London in my life. I haven't driven into central London since I was about 20.
Yeah, I've never driven a Land Rover in central London.
But it did turn heads.
People looked
at me as if I was lost.
It's a really lovely looking thing. I mean, because with the military paint, you do like the WD-40 trick, don't you?
Sometimes, yeah. At the moment, I've not done that. I gave it a wash and just left it. But yeah, to make, it's called IR NATO Green, Infrared NATO Green. Probably one of the best places to get it is Paint Man. I think everyone knows about them.
Yeah,
they're really good.
Paint Man on here before, haven't we?
And it's a very dead, flat, matte green, as you would expect. But if you want it to look more sort of showy, a little bit different, you can either get a big gallon can of WD-40 and just wipe it on. Well, I'd spray it with a little pump spray and then just wipe it down. It makes it sort of satin.
Yeah,
finish.
I remember seeing it one of our spares days, I think you came to.
Yeah.
And it looked, oh. Yeah.
It darkens the paint a bit and just adds that slightly different finish. A lot of other people use dubbin, and I've got a tin of dubbin, but obviously that's a bit thick. You need to warm it up, and you sort of smear it on and polish it down a little bit. That lasts longer than WD-40, because obviously if it rains, WD-40 will leach off. So if you've done it on your roof, you'll end up with like oil
dripping
down your
roof.
What is dubbin? Glass. Pardon my ignorance.
Dubbin is like a wax that people put on,
something
like
your boots.
Saddles, you know, horse tack and all that sort of stuff.
Got you.
Yeah.
Probably like a beeswax, isn't it, dubbin?
I'm not sure what it's made of. It's made of dubbin.
Yeah.
Made of dubbin.
Yeah. It'd probably look after your chassis, wouldn't it?
Probably.
Pretty leather boots.
It feels a bit like grease, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about one of my favourite projects you've had on the go recently, Lionel. Lionel the 90.
Oh, bless him. Lionel, yes.
An absolute gem.
Lionel was, or still is, I should say, a 1993 Defender 90 hardtop and I bought it unseen, just from pictures on the internet, because, and what drew my eye was the fact that it was just so untouched. So if you imagine any Defender 90 from the early 90s would have had loads of owners over the years, would have had loads of things bolted on, changed, upgraded, messed about with.
Holes drilled.
It wouldn't be original at all. Lionel was operating at Porton Down. It was the Defence Science Transport Manager's vehicle. And so they weren't in the business of going out to Halfords and buying some chrome stick-on stuff, or, you know, phoning up one of the suppliers in your magazine saying, can I have some checker plate?
I bet he didn't have white eight spokes on either.
He definitely did not have white eight spokes or chrome eight spokes,
oh,
which we know that Jack loves. Yeah. Sorry, Jack.
I'll
never be a fan of those.
Keith, no, for chrome.
Lionel.
Does he like chrome?
He's got them on his Series 2A, Steve. Yeah. Keep up.
Oh, well, I don't look at.
Is it Grandma, that one?
Oh, yeah, Grandma, the black one.
Yeah.
88 inch.
The one that he had in Cornwall and then shipped out.
Oh, that's got chrome eight spokes.
Yeah, it looks really good because it's black.
And with a spare wheel that's so big on the bonnet, I'm surprised he can see the road. Sorry, Jack. I know we've messaged about this. He knows that I have a little bugbear about them.
We're getting Jack on soon because now that we've become aware that the internet is capable of recording podcasts, we've opened a whole new world of potential guests. So hopefully, if the internet stretches all the way to Australia, we can get him on and we can ask him about his eight-spoke addiction.
Or better still, bring him over for LRM Live. Have him in person could meet him.
Yeah, that would be good, actually.
Yeah,
as long as he pays the flight.
Yeah. I'm sure we could chip in a few quid.
Yeah. Good chat. Oh, yeah. But, I forget about chrome eight-spokes.
Lionel, though.
So, anyway, Lionel.
Yeah, let's stop talking about chrome eight-spokes.
We were on cheese and crackers earlier.
Yeah. Anyway, so, Lionel, completely untouched vehicle, never been modified, but just... obviously serviced regularly, but not maintained cosmetically. And I thought, I can make that look, you know, as good as possible with the skills that I've got. So I won the auction, got it home, and I just spent a year doing, not like a year solid, but in my spare time, weekends, I've got two kids now, so I don't have as much time as I used to, but just, you know, bringing it back to life. And one of the most satisfying things was the paintwork. Because he was Pennine Grey. So, you know Greg King? He's got his H-Reg 90. That's Pennine Grey. And if people obviously follow him on Instagram, my Primer Grey 90. But the irony is that Lionel's paint actually felt and looked like primer paint. You could rub your hand on it. It was hard, like sandpaper.
Oh, okay.
And that's purely just because it hadn't been looked after. So anyway, I got all my kit and caboodle out and I started cutting it back with compound. Then I do polish. Then I do the wax. I also did clay bar and detarring, all that sort of stuff. Bit nerdy, as you probably guess. But the difference, I did one panel, you know, the detailers on Instagram use, where you put like a piece of blue tape and you go up to the tape and then you peel it off and see the difference on the left and the right. And it was just like, wow, just so different. And I brought all his paintwork back to life. I even did the inside to bring all the interior paint as good as it could be. And he looked fantastic. I had to replace a few bits where necessary, but I just wanted to keep him really original as he was. For his next step in life.
Did you name him Lionel?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just looked at his number plate. It was L and then N-E-L or C-E-L. And I just saw the name Lionel and just thought, that's it.
So
Lionel.
If you name a Land Rover, I always think that if you name it, you should keep it.
Yeah. There is that. My wife became really attached to it really early, which was disconcerting.
Okay.
It's really... Yeah. Maybe I could use it. You're not going to want to use this every day in a million years. She's used to a nice, comfy Kia with all, you know, all the spec
all
on
the bells and whistles, yeah.
Heated steering wheels, heated seats. None of that exists, and I'm not putting it in.
Yeah, but it looks cool.
It does look cool.
It was a stunning machine. Yeah.
And it drove... Because it only done 74,000 miles. Mm. A 200 TDI with that... One owner, basically. Probably had several people driving it over the years.
Yeah,
but one registered owner and that little miles. I mean, the engine bay looked like it had just come, you know, back from a dealership.
Mate, I'm thinking I should have bought this. It sounds like, I mean, they are still out there, though. You've just got to dig about, haven't you?
And the thing is, I mean, for me, I spotted it because I could see past the initial visual impact of how tired it looked. I just thought... All, you know, things on the front, like the grill, the light surrounds, they were all cracked. They were covered in algae. You know, it was that bad. The roof was covered in mold and algae. But I knew that was superficial. Mm. And that if you cut that back a layer type of thing.
Is that why you bought it? Because it was a
a project that you I've always just enjoyed the process.
Yeah.
I bought my first Defender way back when I'd still had an L322, funny enough. It was a Defender 90 in green, Belize green, and I just did things to it. I changed the interior like most people do, put a stereo in it, put a LaSalle headlining in it, stuff like that, really made it look nice. In fact, the photos from that are still on the LaSalle website because I sent them in. But I just enjoy the process of, you know, not rebuilding, because I'm not doing gearboxes and engines and stuff like that, but just recommissioning.
Gentle recommission.
It is really satisfying, isn't it, to see that process, like you say, regardless of the start point and how much you do yourself. It's just so, encouraging and it's super satisfying.
And you don't have to limit that to Defenders as well. I mean, we're here to talk about Range Rovers mostly today, and you can still do things on an L322 at home that are not too difficult. And the visual aspects, I was showing Martin earlier, that previous owner had sort of, they call it the murdered outlook, where everything's made black, you know, the lettering, the grill, splitter bar at the front, the fog surrounds, the side grills. You can change all of that at home.
Yeah.
You can do it yourself.
Yeah.
And the parts actually are not very expensive. I've got to replace the rear mud flaps, not they were murdered out or anything, but there's a mysterious hole in one of them. The other one's had a bad repair. New pair of mud flaps, £21.
Yeah.
That's cheap, isn't it?
I put mud flaps on, as soon as I got the Freelander 2, I put front and rear mud flaps on it, and they're similar kind of like aftermarket ones, and you can see where whoever's made them has ground the Land Rover badge off where they've moulded the originals. Yeah. But yeah, like you say, the parts are affordable now, and if you're half reasonable, practically, you know, do bits and pieces yourself, you can soon turn around a really downtrodden looking car into something that's really quite special.
It's not to say that you can't buy a lemon, because I mean, you said earlier they're very affordable. They are, but there's still if you're not willing to put the money into maintaining it properly, you will end up regretting it.
They are a premium car new, which needed premium maintenance.
They're a
cheaper car now, but they still need premium maintenance.
Yeah, you can buy parts, obviously, that are no longer... You don't need to have the genuine parts for everything now, because they're well out of their Land Rover warranty and stuff like that. But you should buy good quality parts, because I think it will bite you on the bum if you don't.
It's the 8.5 litres of oil that makes me wince every time I think. Every time it needs a service, that's a significant...
Well, you say that, but you can negate some of the costs. If you're the type of person that's willing to service your car at home. So I did my Disco 4. I did an oil change at home just because I wanted to. I wanted to do an interim oil change, and it's on my YouTube channel. I should just plug that. Like and subscribe.
Go for it.
If you can find me, Adam TWRM.
YouTube channel? I'll cut you off there.
I am Adam TWRM, just like my Instagram profile.
Okay.
There's not many people look at it.
YouTube stuff is really good.
Yeah.
Actually, well, I'm not just saying that, but...
Thanks very much.
You know, you were doing something to an interior of a Discovery 4.
Could have been the door seal.
But I watched it, and I don't have a Discovery 4 or the need to do a door seal. I can't remember what it was, the video now, but some type of...
No, it was just very engaging.
Yeah, very engaging content.
This anyway, the point I was going to make was if you did an oil change on a Range Rover or a Disco 4 at home, I've proven that you can do it on a Disco 4 for £38.
Okay.
Go on.
Yeah.
So you get the right spec oil, obviously. Mm-hmm. Don't go cheap on the oil, but you can buy them in 20-gallon drums.
Okay.
A Disco 4 needs 7 litres. So 20 gallons will get you 3 changes. Get
so you're buying it in bulk?
Buying it in bulk, effectively. Okay. You buy an OEM filter, about £10. And the only apparatus you need is one of those oil suction devices, which you can get on Amazon. They're not much money, £20-30. So once you've got one of those, sort of, you can amortise the cost of that over multiple oil changes. But, you know, parts-wise, £38, oil and filter, and it's just, you can actually do it in probably about half an hour, maybe 40 minutes. But I was filming it, trying to do a how-to at the time, so it took about an hour and a half. But, it's easy to do.
I was very dubious about those oil suction pumps and sucking it out of the tube, the extraction tube, when that first came in. But actually, it's quite a sensible way of doing things. Some of them don't have a proper sump bung. They just have the oil drain tube is kind of where you drain the oil from if you want to drain the oil, which has a quick release plastic connector. And after about 3 or 4 oil changes, that plastic connector is getting very tired. So yeah, you're better off, like you say, sloping it out the top, especially as now they are as affordable as you say, like the suction pumps. not horrendous money, and a lot cleaner as well than rolling around on the floor, dropping the under tray.
The one thing I really detest is getting underneath something on a gravel driveway and you're getting oil up your arms.
That's why you never do it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's why I pretend I'm filming Martin or taking pictures. He does it.
Yeah.
Result. But yeah, it's costly. But like, is there jobs that you would do, other jobs you do to an L322 at home, apart from doing the oil?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I have serviced L322s on my driveway in the past, before I did a road trip to France. I had a TD6 at the time. Tonga Green, so Clarkson spec. Okay. Before Clarkson had even bought his.
Yeah.
You know, in like 2 days' time, when we're going to the NEC, there's the Queen's...
The Royal Harness.
Oh, another one.
Yeah, another one.
Because that last one went for 175 grand, didn't it?
It was... I know there's a lot. I can't remember the exact price, but this one's like a guide of 50 to 60,000. Which is a loss, isn't it?
I think it'll go for more.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Because there's the provenance. There's pictures of Her Majesty driving it. So it's a genuine one. So, I think it'll go for more than that.
We shall see. We'll be able to report back next week. We'll talk about the results. Can I jump in with a listener's question quickly? Because it's Range Rover related.
Cool.
Oh, far away. Yeah.
Remafage. I'm really sorry if I've butchered your name. I think that's how you pronounce it. He says, "Dear LRM team, we are a group of Range Rover enthusiasts from Germany planning a classic Land Rover road trip through England between May and August 2026 over 5 to 7 days. Our vehicles are all Range Rover P38s. They're often misunderstood, but much loved generation by us. We're dedicated to keeping them alive. We've currently got about 60 members in our group, although only a small number of vehicles take part in the UK trip. Our planned route will take us from Harwich to Gaydon to the British Motor Museum, then via Solihull, Eastnor Castle, Breen Beach, the Dunsfold Collection, and finally to Dover. As genuine Land Rover enthusiasts, we'd love to hear your recommendations on if there are any must-see locations, clubs, trails or events along the route that we shouldn't miss, and if there are any perhaps places of special interest for Range Rover fans in particular. We'd love to hear any tips or ideas that you've got. Warm regards, Remafage, on behalf of the Range Rover P38 Enthusiasts Germany." And he's attached a rather lovely photo of said Range Rovers all lined up.
Wow, what a lineup.
They are.
Yeah.
Look at them.
Oh, wow.
So,
how great to see people who really love the P38. I never had a P38. My dad had one, and I drove it. And it was a DT, so it was the slowest version, which really put me off them. But they are still a fantastic vehicle. I can think of three answers to his question. Well, I'll let you guys go.
No, you go first.
Well, he's already mentioned the first one, the Gaydon Motor Museum.
Yes.
I mean, that's a great place to go. Jaguar Land Rover Classic. That's got to be worth going to. That, you've been to that, but I haven't.
Have you not?
No.
Oh, Adam.
Have you been?
Yeah, where's my invite?
We need to organise a day out there.
Actually, Nick Dimbleby said he was going to take me to that end of the summer, and I haven't had that invite yet.
He never said which summer, though.
He's a busy chap. True. He's driving his Freeland around India at the moment.
He is.
Yeah. Really?
He's going to the Himalayas, isn't it?
Mm.
So there's that one, the Jaguar Land Rover Classic. And then also, don't they have at Load Lane a special Range Rover exhibition thing?
You can book an experience. Is that what you're thinking of, through JLR's experience?
I think so.
Yeah, if you head on, I would definitely echo your thoughts on going to JLR Classic at Wrighton. Absolutely amazing. And if do not miss that. It is brilliant. Dunsfold Museum, you've already mentioned you're going there. 100%. Do not miss that either.
Oh, I thought of another one.
Go on.
Eastnor Castle. Do the Land Rover experience at Eastnor Castle.
Are they going there?
They don't say why they're going there, but they're going to Eastnor Castle.
They should do the off-road experience there.
Go on JLR's website and click on experiences and see what takes your fancy on there, because there's a few different things you can do. I would definitely do them, and I would certainly book JLR Classic, as you said, at Wrighton. Sounds like a great trip. You should give us a shout and send us some pictures when you've done it. I'd love to get that in.
The trip's mostly in the south, isn't it? Sort of up to the Midland, but then south of the Midlands.
They're
not going up north to Scotland or anywhere. That's quite brave, though, wouldn't it? Go to Scotland.
Yeah.
Bunch of P38s at the M6.
Love Land Rovers? Then you'll love Land Rover Monthly, the world's best-selling Land Rover magazine. Packed with adventures, expert tips, restorations, buying guides, and loads more. For the best deals, subscribe today at landrovermonthly.co.uk and never miss an issue.
I like the P38. But again, much like, I suppose, the L322, we joke sometimes about, you see like badly modified Range Rover Sports on like knockoff 22-inch alloys sitting on their bump stops on driveways. A lot of P38s have fallen into the hands of people who see them and go, oh, I just want a cheap off-roader to smash up at a pain play. So keeping the nice ones nice, I think, is an admirable thing to do.
I've seen the odd L322 that had that sort of treatment as well, though.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Awful. Proper drug dealer smell.
Yeah.
Not even so much that. It's just, I don't know. I think when something, I can't really talk because I only ever buy things when they're cheap enough, but when they fall into that kind of, do you know what I mean? That kind of bracket, it's only going to end one way and that poor vehicle's probably going to get crushed.
Hmm.
But.
So how's today then, Martin? Has it made you want an L32 more?
Yeah.
Or less?
Adams is, more. Definitely more.
Yeah. If anyone wants to see said vehicle, I've got a video on my YouTube channel all about it. It's already there.
What was that YouTube page?
Martin will put it somewhere for you to find.
We should,
we'll put a few snaps up, because the picture of you and your high viz from last week's podcast was quite well received. So we need to put a bit more effort into promoting it.
Thomas said it looked like I was leaving LRM to go to work.
Tom Bayford said you've got a job on the railways to pay for your Jag. What was I going to say? Oh, that's what I was going to say. We don't ask for much on the podcast, but if you've recently joined, recently discovered us, and you've listened to a few of them and you enjoy them, do us a favour and listen to some of the older ones as well, because we've been chatting nonsense about Land Rovers for nearly 80 weeks now.
And, is it that many?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't missed a week yet. So if you like it, go back and also tell your mates about it.
You missed a week when you lost your voice.
Who did you do it with that week?
Alice.
Did you?
And you went on holiday. How dare you?
Yeah, I went on holiday.
I got two
in the bag before I went on holiday.
Yeah.
I planned ahead.
Yeah. We did.
Is Steve going to plan ahead for his holiday?
Yes.
What do you think? Yeah. You might be coming back, Adam, to do a round two.
Suits me.
Yeah.
Bye, Steve.
Yeah. It's been emotional. Yeah.
You're fired.
I can't believe we've done nearly 80.
It would be the L322 podcast, I think, if Adam came in every week. And that would...
Well, no, I mean, I can talk about the other Land Rovers. I've got quite a broad church, I think.
Yeah. But we've been... people have often commented about the lack of range of content on this podcast.
They've asked, we do get quite a few emails asking about, but the thing is, like, between us, we don't own a Range Rover at the moment.
Yeah,
I think all those emails were from me.
Yeah, probably, actually.
Yeah.
Why aren't you talking about Range Rovers anymore? I didn't even have a Range Rover. I'd just like to hear about them.
We've had three or four emails from you, haven't we, in the past?
Three or four.
Yeah.
Conservative, but yes.
Yeah.
No, it's good. Normally when you're on a train, you tend to put in.
Yeah.
Good commuter noise drowns out the background, but we're happy to be of service, to be perfectly honest. But yes,
just so happens that the podcast is about the same length as London St Pancras to Leicester. So,
oh, right, okay, there you
worked
go,
worked out quite well.
At least our podcasts go out on time, unlike some of the trains,
exactly.
I need to bring up a new issue of Land Rover Monthly on sale today, so go out and buy it, please. It'd be very, very good. Winter issue. And the cover star is a very, very smart TDCI Defender 90, which has been owned by two different people who've owned it for two different reasons. And Alistair got together with both of them and got their opinions on why it brought both of them so much joy and pleasure.
When does that come out?
Today.
So that means mine will be literally, it should be in my porch right now then, because I subscribe.
You would have got yours a bit sooner.
Yeah, yours will be there.
I haven't had it yet.
No, but this is we're recording this in advance of today.
Oh, yeah. The magic of the internet.
Today,
I forgot about that.
Today is Wednesday.
Maybe you're not fired yet. Steve.
Yeah.
Scheduling needs some work.
Yeah, no, but you'll have had your new issue.
Yes, indeed.
Excellent.
So,
in fact, they should be, I mean, our copies should be in the office today. Today
you might be able to get a fresh one.
You might be able to get one.
Hot off the press.
We'll go find one. Yeah. It's been printed.
Mm. We're going off on quite an extreme tangent here.
Well, that's not unlike us.
I know.
Not quite as much as at lunchtime, but there you go.
Yeah, so lunchtime, we talked about cheese on crackers.
Yeah.
What else have we talked about?
Would you rather eat? Would you rather binge eat mince pies or what were those things?
Carr's water biscuits.
Water biscuits.
Yeah, it's a tough choice.
No, it isn't.
The question was, how many mince pies could you eat in one session?
Many. Many. Anyone who knows me, I could delete some serious mince pies.
That is one good thing about the festive period is the amount of mince pies on offer.
Well, as I said, I had my first mince pie of the season yesterday. Neil popped over to my house and he brought some because he'd been to the shop. And now I am worried for my health because the floodgates are now opening. It's mince pie season and I'm an addict.
They're really, like, they're so bad for you, but they're full of sugar, aren't they, and full of fat. But they're just...
One of your five a day, though. They've got fruit in them.
They have to be, yeah.
But the... But there's so many different styles of mince pie now, isn't there? You've got like the open top one, the one with icing on top.
I quite like that.
Icing?
Yeah, have you not seen these?
Yeah. See, the reason I don't like mince pies is because, like I said, too much pastry. The pastry on the top ruins it.
Yeah, so they do like an open one and the topping is icing on top.
A convertible pie. You've got one. The one I had yesterday.
Soft top mince pie.
Was a frangipani one, which is like got almondy type.
Okay. Like a Bakewell tart.
Sort of, yeah. That was quite nice. There's a lot of different styles of mince pie.
Yeah, like the lattice top ones.
I might have just been converted back to mince pies.
You need to try a different type.
It's a whole wide world of mince pies out there.
It's a bit like pork pies, because pork pies, again, too much pastry, but you can get them topless. Actually, I shouldn't say that. It sounds rude.
Topless.
Like a chutney on top.
Yeah, or Stilton cheese or something like that on the top.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
UK's number one pie podcast. Oh, that's a...
There'll be people, if there are people abroad listening to this, they'll be thinking, what is a pork pie?
Yeah.
They might not know what a pork pie is. We're all from the land of pork pies, aren't you?
Yeah. Used to live in the Melton Mowbray area. Used to live next door to Long Clawson Stilton Dairy. Used to get free cheese.
God. Yeah. What a life.
Yeah, well, that's
it's a shame I didn't really like Stilton cheese, but there you go.
That's where the cheese and crackers conversation came from, because you were saying where you used to live.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a tangent and a tangent.
Yeah. The emergency cheese evacuation. That was the story, wasn't it?
Yeah, your house was... Yeah. Go on, Adam.
Yeah, so the house I lived in was the dairy manager's house. It was literally next door to the dairy. And when I bought it, obviously they'd moved the dairy manager into the offices a long, long time ago. But they came round to welcome me to the community, because they're good like that, and they told me a story about my house. So we were sitting in my kitchen, which used to be the garage, way back in the day. And in the 1930s, there was a fire at the dairy and they had to evacuate the cheese to save the cheese. So they grabbed all the cheese and they took it through the fence next door to the dairy manager's house and they stored it in the rafters of his garage, which was my kitchen.
Oh, I see.
So apparently, my house saved the cheese that year.
There you go. Oh. Well,
but you never thought you'd hear that on an LRM podcast.
No.
This is going to be we truly do cover all the bases here, don't we? From meal deals to pies to cheese.
Yeah, the meal deal thing, don't get that.
We're not bringing that back up. Yeah. No. Thankfully, we put that to bed. But you'll have to come back on because there's plenty more to talk about. We haven't even touched on half of your fleet.
We haven't done a feature of the week yet or anything like that.
Well, I did sort of do
product of the week.
Feature of the week
was because, the cover story.
Which was, as I say, that very, very smart.
Hey, Adam, asking for products of the week. Go on, see how organised he is.
Have you got products of the week, Martin?
No.
All right.
He's sitting there all casual. No
prep.
There is no product. Have a product of the week and then miss one.
Why?
Because then it becomes product of the month.
But we always
should we just come up with a product? Does it have to be something that's being sold in LRM?
What is the number? No,
what about something that's just really useful to Landry?
Yeah, go on then.
I mean, why not?
Oh, right, I've really put myself on the spot there, haven't I? If I was going to add in a product of the week, something that I use all the time is a long breaker bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always use that for cracking off the wheel nuts on all my cars. Obviously, changing wheels, putting winter wheels on. One of the things I did when I bought the Range Rover was went round with my breaker bar, and obviously it's just 22 mil on the Range Rover, it's 27 on the Defenders. And I went round looking for, this is going to sound really weird and rude, swollen nuts. The chrome caps expand.
Yeah.
So I went round looking for those. I found five. I'd already got a whole bag of new ones ready, because it's one of those things that if you've had a few of them, you just know that there's going to be things like that that come along. So I had a whole set of wheel nuts ready and a new set of the locking wheel nuts, because they always go a bit scabby and corroded looking. and I found 5 swollen nuts. So I replaced all those, replaced all the locking wheel nuts. And yeah, I go around and I crack the wheel nuts off one by one, because you can guarantee if someone's done it with an air gun, if you're on the side of the road,
you're not going to get
in the rain, and you just can't do it. So yeah, do those and then torque them back up afterwards to the correct torque, instead of like 400 foot pound.
One of my pet peeves is when you go to like these independent tire places and they just baz the wheels up with a gun, and you think, brilliant. That's never coming undone, is it, with the factory wheel brace? And like you say, the swollen nuts, really a big problem.
Yeah.
But keep on top of it. My Freelander, they're all the same. In their infinite wisdom, put like a nice chrome sort of silver cap over them, and then water gets in and they swell out. You can't get the socket on. And it's,
well, you have to ram on the 23 mil one.
Yeah.
And then try and get it off afterwards.
And then it's like rounds and... Ugh.
Yeah. But that's one of the small improvements you can make to any Range Rover, any Land Rover, with the that type of wheel nut. Actually quite low hanging fruit compared to a lot of the stuff you might well have to keep on top of. So
yeah
there you go. Well,
so get yourself a breaker bar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Products of the week, but it's not a product, it's just a suggestion.
A tip of the week.
Tip of the week.
Yeah. Don't introduce any more of the week things, because as Steve's already kindly brought up, I'm not very good at keeping on top of them. But if you'd like an actual product of the week, I can supply you one from the current issue, which is just coming off sale. Or is that a bit of a cop-out? I'll tell you what, I'm going to do it anyway. Christmas stockings. You're never too old for a Christmas stocking. Stitch and Rivet have got you covered as well. As you can look at them, Adam.
Oh, yeah.
Look at those beauties. Oh,
yeah. What a nice colour palette as well.
I know.
Almost looks like a Range Rover L322 brochure colour palette.
It does.
That's the autobiography edition. Yeah. Not really. But they are made from Stitch and Rivet's durable fabric, finished with a lovely fluffy cuff thing on top. 5 different colours, which is sort of like tan, blue, wine red, black, and I don't know what that is, like a navy. And you can get your own design stitched on them if you want. £45 Stitch and Rivet.
They do look great, but I can see one minor flaw. You're not going to get many Land Rover parts in them.
You might,
because Land Rover parts tend to be quite big.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, you could hang a breaker bar in there, couldn't you?
Also, the picture isn't really to scale, so we don't know how big they are. They might be enormous. You might get a 3-litre TDV6 in one of them. You never know.
Fantastic.
Which might
need one of those.
You might. I mean, not this time, not this breakdown, but possibly another.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
hopefully
never know.
Not. But anything more to add? I think we're coming up to. We must be over an hour now. I think I haven't been timing it.
No, we probably are over an hour because I need to get out of here.
Yes. Oh, are we going to break news now?
Well, no, not yet. I've got to leave early.
Got an urgent appointment.
Urgent appointment.
Serious business to attend.
Yeah. I need to offload one of the cars, and I think people might know what that is.
Yeah. I think you're doing the right thing.
Do you want to have a quick look at my Range Rover before you go?
Yeah. Well, I've already had
just enough for a few ideas.
I'm not going to buy anything else yet. Said no one ever.
Yeah. We shall see.
No, but I've got nothing else to buy.
As always, thank you ever so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, if you want to leave us some feedback or ask a question, editorial@lrm.co.uk. Follow Steve on Instagram, Steve Miller Automotive. Follow me, Land Rover Martin. Follow Adam.
@AdamTWRM.
And on YouTube, indeed.
Indeed.
As always, please do buy the magazine, sign up for the newsletter, keep an eye on our socials. Yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.
Thank you.